It's Chatter on Books, and if you think this introduction is boring, you try writing the copy. I'm Jamie McIntyre. Here's Tori Clark.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Chatter on Books. This is another packed show. Just a few minutes, we're going to be talking to April Reynolds, who is a writer, she's a teacher, she's an award winner, and she is the author, most recently, of The Shape of Dreams, which is one of the most original books I've ever read. And we're also going to have another nominated author from Black Pearl Books in Austin, Texas. And we're looking forward to talking with all of you. Michael Williams from Black Pearl Books, which is a wonderful bookstore in Austin, has nominated Katie for The Pitch, which is our writing competition. And yes, the world does not need another writing competition, but it does need one, as this one is, fueled by independent bookstores. So we have these independent bookstores from across the country that are nominating someone from their region. And we gave them, I was going to say next to no criteria. We gave them no criteria. These bookstore owners like Micah, or we've got Mitch Kaplan on next week from Books and Books in Miami. Great guy. Okay, well, what category? Whatever you want. Does it have to be fiction or nonfiction? Could be anything. Could it be poetry? Sure. So there was no criteria given. But Katie, what do you think it was about your work and this book that made Micah and Black Pearl Books nominate you?
I think it's because Black Pearl is really focused on the African-American experience, not just the ones that people are familiar with, like Toni Morrison and Beloved has its place. But there are so many African-American authors that just do not get their books on the shelf. And there is a readership who would read them if they only knew about it. And a lot of people like think that it's all ebooks, but what I found, speaking from personal experience, while I sold a lot of ebooks, a lot of people want the actual physical media.
Yeah, I know, I do.
And physical media requires someone who has to have enough faith in it to put it on the shelves. And that means they have to be well-read. That means that they have to have a really good infrastructure. And Black Pearl has that. Like, they are really, really dedicated. And they read their books, they can talk at length. And what's cool is they also have like a vinyl record section of all this like old music, not old, quote unquote old, but like if you really want the vinyl record of the Notorious B.I.G. or Wu-Tang Clan, you can go and physically get it there. If you want t-shirts and hats and stuff, but are connected to Black people. And you don't see that. I mean, one of the ironies about when I went viral was that I had said, I don't know if I'll ever be able to see my book on the shelf because I'm writing about, yes, I'm writing about werewolves, but usually in the past, it's gotten better. Usually there's a section called the African-American literature section, and that will have everything. There will be, you know, everybody's just crammed together and the only thing they have in common is their race. And while it's great that there is that department and it's great that you can go, not everybody's going to that section of Barnes & Noble. And that has since changed with the world has changed and the writership has changed. And so you've got a huge like young adult, Children of Bone and Blood and other books of that nature, where YA has had a lot of readership. There's even like middle grade. There's this great book called Nerd that is written by he's a geek. He's a self-proclaimed nerd, but he is trying to speak towards children who are the artistic nerdy kid who's African-American, who is dealing with the not so great parts of what life is like. And recently, there's a couple people who couldn't take the online hatership and decided to check out early. And that is a problem. And he wrote a book specifically for little girls and little boys who feel that way. Because, and I'm part of this crowd, I am writing for the people who feel invisible, who like science fiction and fantasy and don't feel seen. And Black Pearl has this wonderful selection where I can walk in and I'm like, I've read this, 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 this. Oh, I haven't read this before. Wow. And that's so exciting because not everybody values that. And they do. So, I mean, they're amazing. And they have these great events. Like there's a book club where they were discussing Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower. That was last month. And, you know, not everybody has read Parable of the Sower. So this is a great opportunity. And that's, you know, and there's like a men's reading group and a women's reading group.
Erica was talking about that before. The men's books clubs are the best. It's the best thing. There's a wild, I live in we call it the DMV in Washington, D.C. Lauren will laugh when I say this, but or Erica will laugh because it used to be Washington, D.C. and there's Maryland, Virginia. And now we call ourselves the DMV because that sounds so much cooler. But there's a men's book club in the DMV, which has the greatest odd cast of characters that are in it from every walk of life. And I tap into them once a month just to hear what they're doing. But we've heard about Black Pearl Books men's book club, which is fantastic. Can I go back to your point for a second? And Erica, I'm going to say one thing and then I'll shut up so you can talk. I'll say this very carefully because I can say really stupid things pretty quickly. I really take your point. I call it the Toni Morrison section. Oh, here's the African-American section. Here's the Black, right? It's going to be Toni Morrison. But God bless, right? Yeah. Unbelievable. However, there's so much else going on. People like yourself who are writing all these cool, cool genres that we don't even know how to articulate them out. And I think the inspiration, again, I'll say this carefully, for young people is more profound coming from you. I really do. I really do. I think a lot of people, in particular young people, Erica, you weigh in on this. Young people being inspired by somebody and saying, like, you have so many freshmen. Erica, among her many talents, teaches KD, think they can't really write. But I think people could look at you and relate and go, wow, if she can write like that and she can do that kick-ass art, maybe I could. Erica, do you think there's something to that? As a guide for young people?
Absolutely. And I love what you said, Katie, about being able to walk into a bookstore and discover titles you've never heard about before. I think actually that builds confidence. So if a young person is only hearing about the classics and they're only hearing about people who have Pulitzer Prizes and Nobel Prizes, that doesn't seem attainable. But yeah, if someone sees all these fresh, wonderful new voices, definitely I think you're going to have more people who are saying, I have a story to tell too, and I'm going to try and see what I can come up with. But Katie, I want to ask you about your cover art. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. I did it myself.
Oh, fantastic.
it's really the genesis. I don't know. The story is I have 2 degrees in art. I have been an artist. And for me, I would read and I would write and I would draw. And it became like this kind of cyclical thing where you're drawing what you're feeling. And when I had my pen name, Katie Blade. Blade is my dog's name. And when I went viral on TikTok, people thought my name was Blade. So everyone was calling me Blade. And I was like, all right, sure. Because that was the handle on my account. And then my dog passed away last year. And it was really hard. And I'm not going to go into it. But long story short, to get myself out of bed, I started, hello. I started drawing, and Sharpie came out with these really cool markers that look beautiful on top of black cardstock. And I just started drawing, and that was what got me. First, it started with flowers, and then it just started becoming werewolves. And I drew this picture, and it's the vampire versus the werewolf, because who but a werewolf can tell a vampire no? And I liked showing the bright, vibrant colors. And sometimes you draw something and it just says, this is going to be the cover. And that was how I felt about that one. And it was just like super fun. But then using the, you know, black woman with the full hair, her eyes are looking directly at the camera, because that's generally the expression a black woman has when someone is reaching for their hair. They're kind of looking at you. They have, you know, smacked your hand away, but they are thinking. And so it's kind of like the two images are playing with each other, because it's what she wishes she could do, is that, you know, turn into a werewolf and eat that person who's reaching for your hair. And I have that scene in the story to introduce one of the characters, is that they're at a party. She's dressed to the nines, looking good in her couture. And here's this, oh, my God, I love your hair. And like turns around and sees this hand that's got Cheeto dust underneath the acrylic manicure. And like, it's greasy. It's just greasy fingers. And they're, and it's a vamp, it's an energy vampire who's trying to take her power. And she turns into a werewolf and eats them.
And so great. Okay, the colors. First of all, I know just enough about this to be dangerous. It'd be really easy for someone to come up with something wild and crazy and use primary colors. The texture in the color is insane. But you talked about how you read, write, and you draw. Is it a circle? And when you're reading, does it influence your writing and your drawing? And then does your drawing influence your writing? How does
Absolutely.
that?
So you get I like to read. So I didn't realize I was writing horror. I was told that by my
You thought these
writing
wolves,
group.
you thought these werewolves and vampires were your friends. What's horrifying about that?
Well, there's a lot of freedom in horror that you can't get in other genres.
For
Like,
sure.
if you're writing YA, you have to still make it for kids. You have to realize, like, sometimes your book is the first thing they've ever read in that genre. They just might like werewolves or vampires, or they watched the Interview with the Vampire and now they're obsessed. So
Yeah.
you'd have to be careful. With horror, unfortunately, there's not a lot. I mean, you have Lovecraft Country, but there are African American authors, there's not that many. And when you see them, you're kind of like the only other person in the woods being like, oh my God, hi, it's good to see you. And
There's another one.
oh
There's
my,
another
yeah,
one.
well, we're just happy to see each other. You know, you don't even care why they're here, what they're writing about, it doesn't matter. You're here, I'm here, great. And the thing about drawing, so I like these acrylic pens using layers to make it look like fur. And the funny thing is, when I was walking around with this poster at Armadillo Con, which is a great convention for sci-fi fantasy horror authors in Austin, people kept trying to pet the poster. They like, and I was like, did you not
Sweet.
read the sign?
You need to do scratch and sniff next.
I mean,
You
I
need to do
actually
scratch and
might.
sniff.
Well, for the art show, I put a bunch of wigs down on the table next to bookmarks and so forth because people kept touching it. Just as a joke, and it worked. People kept touching these wigs. It didn't matter. It said, "Don't touch." People
So
did.
great. All right, Katie Blade, we're going to let you go. Hey, everybody, the book is Katie Blade. The name of the book, Don't Touch My Hair, the book is fabulous. Just the cover art is worth buying this book. When is it out? Is it out now,
It is
Katie?
out now.
Okay,
It's
out now.
available
Everybody
in
can buy it.
paperback and in ebook.
Yes, and in absentia, we'll thank Micah for bringing you to us and nominating you for the pitch. So thank you very much. We will be back in touch, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank
Appreciate it.
you. Take
Nice
care.
talking with you.
So, April, thank you so much for joining. Another Micah Kelsey and I went back and forth for weeks. She had sent me months ago some blurb about you and your book and The Shape of Dreams. And I thought to myself, sounds really interesting. I was throwing out some dates. She goes, no, April Reynolds teaches and she's really busy and we can't do those. And I throw out more dates and she come back and go, what about these? And anyway, we went on for weeks.
Today is my first day of spring break. So
Oh,
this is,
this is
I feel
great.
so good. You know, we do get time off during the year,
You
but you
do,
get in
and
trouble if you don't cancel a class.
as you should, but just but park this in the back of your mind. We have done this podcast, Chatter and Books, has taped in many places, bookstores, libraries, liquor stores,
Is there a way?
sporting arenas. Yeah,
Okay.
we have taped in many places. The only mistake we ever made was we once taped in a liquor store on the Monday of Thanksgiving week. Erica, do you know
Ooh.
Calvert Woodley on Connecticut Avenue?
I
Been around for,
don't. I
oh, it's been
don't.
around for 1,000 years. It's the most famous liquor store in Washington, D.C. And
Oh.
we taped a live show, 6 to 7 p.m. on the Monday of Thanksgiving week. And the customers were enraged because we had four or five of us like tucked around a little table, but we were right in front of the minis, you know, the little mini liquor bottles, right? Shocking how many people want the minis. Like I can't put up with Uncle Harry on Thanksgiving, so I'm gonna have this tucked in my pocket. And we
You
were in
are
front
keeping me
something.
away from my 99
Yeah.
cent whiskey,
That was
lady. You're in your books.
our only mistake. But anyways, thank you to Micah Kelsey for making this happen. And we hopefully will kick you off on a wonderful spring break. So April, everybody at Chatter & Books loves the backstories. I know you teach at Sarah Lawrence, but where are you from? Where'd you grow up? And what did you want to be when you were five?
Wow. Five?
Five. I know a little bit.
Five
I've
year old
listened to a
kids have
lot of it.
aspirations? Okay,
I've read a
fine.
lot and I've listened to a lot of your interviews, so I know a little bit.
Okay. Well, dang it. I am from Dallas, Texas, born and
This is
raised.
Texas night, Lawrence, Texas.
Lauren, where are you from?
I'm from Denton, actually. So,
You are you?
Metroplex, yeah.
I know where. Listen, I'm a Texan. You don't have to explain. This is not one of those
Of course.
conversations. You don't have to be
Yes.
like, because Denton is close to dessert. I know. I know.
All right.
Didn't represent.
Little Austin, right? That's what they call it.
Exactly. I'm from Dallas. I'm from South Dallas, actually. Born and raised. And I've actually like one of those rare birds, or maybe not so rare. I'm actually probably this is true for everyone. I left when I was 18 to go to Sarah Lawrence, and I have been in New York since I was 18. So I've actually spent more time in New York City, which is where I live now, than Dallas, but I still very much consider myself, warts and all, a Texan.
Well,
That's
I'm
amazing.
jealous that you got out and didn't come back. I was in DC for
No.
20 years and here I am back here, which is not where I would choose
Oh,
to
don't do
be.
it. Don't do it, baby.
Via her work, Lauren is global. Global. Okay, but wait, you're a little bit of a rare bird, April, because not that many people from Texas decide they're going to go to Sarah Lawrence. That's a unique choice. What caused you to go to Sarah Lawrence? Because again, I know a lot of creative people who've gone to Sarah Lawrence go, okay, maybe that's it. But my understanding was you were a reader, not necessarily someone who grew up saying, I want to be a writer.
Oh no, I did not want to be a writer. So I was getting ready to graduate from college, and I mean graduate from high school, and I clearly had no idea how to get to college. And I had a teacher, Miss Jordan, who was like, "You need to go to college. I really do. I think you're smart. I think you could be a writer," which I was like, "I'm not really sure what that is, but okay, sure." And we applied, and I ended up applying to this place called Austin College in Sherman, Texas. And I'm talking to the admissions guy there, and he's like, "Okay, look, I'm gonna tell you, I like you for real. I want to know what's our competition." And I'm like, "Trinity." And there's a Trinity in Connecticut, but there's a Trinity in Texas.
There's a Trinity in every state in the country.
Exactly. There's a Trinity
Name them.
College in Texas. And he's like, "You know what, April? I'm going to be honest. Those people are snotty. And you're not snotty. You're going to love it here. We got this. I'm all over this." I'm like, "Great." And I'm like, "Well, and I'm also applying to Wellesley." And he's like, "Look, I don't want to make any assumptions about you, but you need a dude or two. I mean, just that's what I'm saying." And I did not have a third school, but I believe in the power of three. So I say to this guy, the last pamphlet I received, which was Sarah Lawrence. I'm like, "Oh, and Sarah Lawrence." And he's like, "Really? Sarah Lawrence? Really? I mean, April, I really want you to go here, but I really think you should go to Sarah Lawrence. I really do."
That's a good person.
And he picks up the phone and he talks to the director of admissions at Sarah Lawrence. And he's like, "I got this girl in my office right now. And she's applied to your place and you need to take her." Now, I had not applied. And no, that
Small
was
little hiccup, just
a
a tiny little
little
hiccup.
bit. And I didn't want to tell him that I had not applied. So I get out of the interview and I tell Miss Jordan, "Look, so I told a little bit of a fib here, and I don't know what we're gonna do." And she's like, "Fine, nope, I got this." She calls Sarah Lawrence. She's like, "Can I get this application?" Which at the time, a Sarah Lawrence application is just, and "Why don't you write for us another like four or five essays and a short story and a haiku, and we'd like all of that." And so I am up all night for 3 days with Miss Jordan, and we fill out this application and we FedEx it to them, and they get back to me the week after, because when I'm doing all of this, This is like they're already done with applications. They were, they had already sent out their like welcome to Sarah Lawrence letters. But I did it, and a week later, they wrote back and said, "Welcome to Sarah Lawrence."
Wow.
And so my teacher, Miss Jordan, was like, "This was meant. And no, you've never been out of the state. And this is crazy. But I think you ought to go." And that's how I got to Sarah Lawrence.
Wow, that is tremendous. And here's the difference, because I want to get to The Shape of Dreams, which is insane, insanely wonderful. Here's the difference between April Lawrence and me in high school. Lauren and Eric, I don't know about you all, but me in high school, like junior, senior year, whenever you're doing this stuff, the teachers were like, oh, okay, no, you'll never get in there. No. And their phone calls were things like to some school where they had sent 9,000 students before going, okay, you owe us one. We're going to send you this person and you owe us one. So that's the difference. Wow, that's fantastic. And did the writing gene explode when you were at Sarah Lawrence? Was there an aha moment where you went, wow, this is what I'm meant to do?
Not at
Yeah.
all.
We're
I mean,
never going to get to the part where you're a writer because you're a really good writer, are we?
Thank you. No, I think the thing is that my teacher was, Miss Jordan was very much like, "You're a great writer," and blah, blah, blah. But I just came from a place where it's like, that just didn't have any shape to me. And so I ended up taking art history, which I loved. I took French, which I also loved. And I took African American literature. Miss Jordan hears about this because she hears about all things because she is Miss Jordan.
Next show, we'll have Miss Jordan
We
join
have to
us.
have Miss Jordan on. You
Absolutely.
have to have Miss Jordan on. And she says, "How have you gone up there and you haven't taken a writing class? Are you insane? What are we doing? What are we doing?" And so that is how I started taking writing classes my sophomore year. And so that's how I kind of quote unquote became a writer,
Starting
but
to
I
become
think
a
I'm one
writer.
of these writers that I think I always needed a nudge. I was the one who needed the nudge.
Okay,
And
Erica, I should know this and I apologize, but when did you get the writing nudge or the DNA?
I also had a really wonderful teacher in middle school. Miss
I
Hefner.
it's that's the problem. I just never had the teachers. That's
I think that's true, Tori. I think that's true.
you do. You have to have the teachers.
You do. You have to have someone who says, you can do this. You just need that one voice.
Oh, so great.
April, your
Okay.
story is just, I had chills and then I was laughing. It had everything. I feel like this is, that's a novel. That's a movie.
I've got so many plans for the Netflix series. Okay.
Netflix series.
April, you've got to come back because in another show and another time, I want to talk to you because before you wrote The Shape of Dreams, which is insane, you co-authored with a recipe book, a cookbook with Marcus Samuelson. This is my dream future trophy husband, Marcus Samuelson. When he's on those cooking shows, originally I met him on Chopped, and I just thought, I don't care what he's making, I don't care what he's saying. He was a judge. I
He's
just want to
such a
look at him.
cutie pie.
Such a cutie pie. Okay, we'll come back to that. But segue to The Shape of Dreams. And I'm going to respectfully disagree with the blurb on the back. This it had to be the publishers. A trio of women come together in friendship and tragedy when a murder occurs and a neighborhood tries to seek justice from a system that has forgotten them. April, that is such one layer of this incredibly deep, complex book. That is one layer.
Listen, people have to write copy, man.
They
Copy is
do.
important.
They do. Well, they should call me because this is one of these books, as Eric and Lauren know, I read all our books that when people come on the show, and I often listen to them as well. And this is one, and this doesn't happen often, but I read two-thirds the way through the printed copy, and I was listening to it in my car. And I'm getting near the end, and I just kept driving because I said, no, I think some of these things are going to happen. I don't know if I want those to happen, but I couldn't stop listening to it or reading it. And I went back to read the end. It's insane in a really, really good way. And I think it is. I started writing my notes for the blurbs that we'll put out. And this is a community struggling. This is some really big things that were happening in society in the 1980s because of crack and other things. One of the things that really stunned me is there are many, many characters in this book. Twin, by the way, my spirit animal. Twin is
You
my
know
spirit.
what? I am really happy that
She's my
everyone likes Twin. I was
spirit
worried about Twin. I mean,
animal.
I like her. But you
Spirit
know,
animal.
like how you have that like best girlfriend who you
Oh.
really like, then you try to put that to the real friend group, and they're like, I don't know about that girl. She's
Oh,
kind of
I did.
crazy. She's kind of cray cray.
From the very beginning, I did. And I'm going to try so hard not to do spoiler alerts here, but everybody stop listening to the show and go buy the book, Shape of Dreams, because so often, and I know nothing about writing or literary stuff, and Erica's going to jump in here soon and save me. But often when there are a lot of characters in a book, you learn a lot about these two, but not over here.
Sure.
And so many of these characters, whether it was Carl, the minister, Anita and Wanda, oh my God, what happens to Anita and Wanda at the end? It's like,
Yeah.
no, don't, right? Or Daryl, who saw that coming, right? The end. But I felt like I really got to know all of them. So I've got one question, then Erica, it's your turn. Are you at Chatter? We love to talk about writers who are Excel spreadsheet kind of writers or seat of the pants, because there's a thread that runs in this from beginning to end. But what is your approach to this, and how did you bring out so much complexity in each of these characters, but they all made sense?
Wow. I think that I'm not either, I think. I think I'm definitely a writer. I write in a way where I can't write unless I think I know where I'm going.
So you knew the ending.
I always had the ending. I
Oh,
always had the ending. I mean, everything else in the book changed but the ending. Our vote don't count was always the last line. So that I knew. But I do need to kind of psych myself out and be like, I know where this is going. And then you get to a place where every writer hates to be, where you're like, I don't know if I know where this is going. And then you've got to go back and rewrite what you thought you had, but you still claim like, but now, but for real, now I know where it's going. So, Twin was a minor character in the first iteration of this novel. And Carl was a major character. He's a protagonist, actually. And
Does Michael B. Jordan play Carl in the Netflix series? The inevitable Netflix series?
You know what? You were so amazing. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Let's manifest it. Let's manifest it right
Like
here.
manifested, put it in. I mean, can you imagine? Wow, I don't even want to say that because I feel like can you imagine? Anyway, so I was sort of constantly, although I will say, Anita and Wanda and Carl. I mean, no, Anita, Wanda, and Twin were the characters that I found personally I liked. They tapped into my most joy. They tapped into the thing that made me the saddest. They tapped into the things that made me the most fresh. Like all of the sort of high emotions, those three women did for me. And I think I kind of got to a place where I was saying this a couple of days ago, but it's true. Like as writers, I don't know if you do this, Erica. We plan, or at least we try to, or we pretend to. And I'm like, damn it, this is my outline, do or die. And it is hard to give up that outline when you've put so much time and effort and you've been thinking. I mean, I don't go crazy and do 50 pages, but you want to, and then you start writing, and then you check in with your outline, and your outline's like, we're not doing that, are we? Are we, girl? And it's a real wrestle to get to that place where it's like, am I going to keep doing what I'm doing, or am I going to do what I said I was going to do in the beginning? And you have to kind of do this, which is why I think writers Erica, I'm talking about you, girl. But why we writers are kind of crazy, because you end up having this kind of conversation, which is strange because it's just you, between what you've written, what your outline is, what your intentions are, and like how to have that debate with yourself and kind of come out of it sane. So yeah, that's how I do it.
Wow. Erica, over to you, my friend.
Well, I had the unsettling realization this afternoon that a book set in the 1980s might be considered historical fiction. I don't know how you feel about that term, April, but I was curious about, your research that what kind of research you did. Did you enjoy that part of the process? And I hate to ask two questions at once because I'll remind you later. But you said you live in New York, so but it's very different than 1985. So does that help you to be there in the city, or did it make it more challenging?
Well, okay. Which would you like me to answer first? The second part or the first part?
I'm curious about everything. We have time for
Okay.
everything, right, Tori?
We
Yeah,
absolutely do.
exactly. I mean, I think, I didn't realize this until like maybe a couple of months ago, which I don't know what that's about, but I am basically the age of Tyrone in 1985, 86. And so I think there's a real germ of this movie, I mean, sorry, this book that
Soon to
is
be, soon to be.
exactly. You see what you do with me with that Michael B. Jordan thing? You just completely took me off track. Now I'm all about that man. We've all seen the movie. We all love it. But I think that there's something about The Shape of Dreams that is a coming of age for me. And
Oh, interesting.
Tyrone and Daryl, they are kind of, I never got into kind of troubles that Daryl got into. And I clearly, at the end of, what happens to Tyrone does not happen to me. But there's this kind of, if you're a kid in the 80s, when you're in this kind of, you're and all of the cities, I mean, this is what I think is interesting about the 80s when I think about it. All of us, if everyone was around and about in the 80s, Erica, I'm looking at you, maybe not. But
Oh, yeah.
the thing that I think is interesting is that all of these cities and our culture, we there's a sort of shared, we all knew Madonna, we all knew Whitney, we all knew Prince, we did. And the things that were happening in our cities, they were happening in New York, they were happening in DC, they were happening in Dallas, they were happening in LA. The crack epidemic wasn't housed in a particular city. It was everywhere. And so I put it in New York City, A, because I was living in East Harlem at the time that I started writing it. And I sort of fell in love with my neighbors. And so that's what I wanted to write about. But the thing that struck me the most is like how their stories about what happened in the 80s very much mirrored what I saw in my neighborhood in South Dallas when I was a kid in the 80s. And so I was very much drawn to that.
Okay, I'm going to see you one and raise you one on
Okay.
that. Because again, everybody, The Shape of Dreams, just stop listening. I know the millions of you listening, just stop and go order this book from an independent bookstore. It's because a really good book makes me go down rabbit holes and research other things, this and that, whatever. And crack in the 80s, every city, to your point, every city experience. But to the extent, in those days, pre-social media, to the extent the media covered it, it was very superficial. It was numbers. It was this many people that we've estimated have died or addicted to these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And they might find one person and, present some tragic picture, right? But again, we've got to talk to the publisher about the blurb, the complexity of it. I mean, every person in this book who was influenced by crack in that neighborhood, they had complexities. It wasn't
Right.
just one size fits all. I'm struggling with it because I'm not good at words. But it really demonstrated the complexity of it. And again, without giving things away, in the beginning of the book, what you think will happen to different people, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but it just has a way of sneaking up on people. And I thought showing the multifaceted face of the influence of crack, and that really made me go back and look. And I do this thing, I know how to research scholarly articles for a reason not worth explaining because I can't spell scholarly. But like coverage of media coverage of crack in the 80s, it
Yes.
was so superficial.
Yes.
It was so superficial. So this is, to Erica's point, this is really good historical fiction. Really good. Fabulous. Okay, we are going to run out of time, and I promise everybody to be careful. So, okay, this is the closest I'm going to get to like talking about literary stuff and words. There were some phrases, April, in your book that made me go, whoa. And I would go and reread them, or if I was listening, I would go back and listen to them. Couldn't get the emotions off the ground. One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish had felt like a righteous path to morality. If that kind of anger had a scent, then Anita reeked of it. And I could have a thousand more. I was like, how did she come up with that? It's very original. How did you come up
Oh,
with that kind of phraseology? That's a
wow.
really bad word, right, Erica? Phraseology. I think an author doesn't want to
No,
hear.
it is not a bad
It's
word.
clear.
And
I feel like
Erica's
I
going to
know
agree with
exactly what you
me.
mean. Yeah.
There you go. Me and Erica, we got you.
Thank you.
I think that's funny. Huh. Those were good lines, weren't they?
Yeah.
I think sometimes when we think about language, and we think about books, we kind of make this crazy decision to like s separate it from its music, right? Like, language is, I mean, Erica can really speak to this because she's a poet, right? Is that language and music are two halves of a whole, right? And there is a musicality to that. So I mean, part of the reason I'm like, huh, is that right? And then I think, I'm a kind of person that if I don't listen to music every day, I get a little cranky. And I do hear, and I do like pop culture, obviously. I love Whitney, Beyonce too.
Little Whitney, little Whitney.
Exactly. But I think I hear that same music in Shakespeare, in Faulkner, in Toni Morrison. For me, they are a one-to-one set. You can hear that music. So you're trying to like, you don't want to do too much alliteration. And you got to cool out on those heroic couplets. But you want your sentences to have a rhythm because that's what we all do naturally when we're telling each other stories,
Yeah,
right? Like when you give
the soundtrack for the Netflix series is going to be insane.
is
Insane.
exactly like
Cult. There's going to be
when
a
you
whole cult
call a
going to
friend and you're like,
come.
girl, guess what happened? Like
Eric,
you are.
does that resonate with you?
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah, absolutely. I just got lost in the way she was describing it.
I
Even
was
that was
too.
poetry. Yeah, that was beautiful. Yeah.
I was too.
Hey, I know just enough about Shakespeare and Faulkner and, this to be dangerous, but this is more original. This is more original.
Thank
Yeah.
you.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get you out with this about the book, and then we're going to subject you from the most sublime to the most ridiculous to 60 seconds more.
Okay.
Voting. Voting is a thread that runs
Yes.
through The Shape of Dreams. Please to explain.
I think that it is, and I think we all know this right now, right? Voting is the heartbeat of America. There's a reason why Trump has got a knife out and is like, no more voting. Let's do, let's, it is the one place where we can speak. It is our voice. It is the American voice, which is to vote. And this is why Black people so wanted to vote. This is, we think about civil rights. It is voting. You think about what's happening now, right? And it's all about like, can we actually figure out how we can get all these people who don't agree with us to stop freaking voting? Right. And it's like whether you're women or you're, like pick your demographic. And really, the powers that be are telling us we cannot vote. And unless you can vote, there is no justice. Right. Like that's what it is. That's really what's happening. And what happens to our country, to our neighborhoods, to our communities, when, despite the fact that we vote, we are not represented, right? And that's also what's happening right now, right? Like that's what's happening. We are all women here, and yet, look at what has happened. Look at the rights that have been taken away from us, and it's like, does our vote count? We're still doing it, and we still should do it, and it is the only answer, right? But it does make you kind of cry out, does our vote count?
I'm doing a disservice to it in your book, The Shape of Dreams. So the reason I mention the book all the time, I think Lawrence heard this, but I don't know if Erica has. So do you know that terrible movie, It's a Wonderful Life? And the little smart, snarmy kid says, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings, right?
Yes.
But on a podcast, every time you name the book, a copy gets sold. So The Shape of Dreams.
Okay.
But it's this wonderful public service message throughout the book about voting.
Yes.
Hey, Chatterheads, it's Jamie here with a couple of quick items before you go. First of all, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate your time. There are, however, a few things you can do to help us keep Chatter chugging along. Of course, you can follow us in all the usual places, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join us on Patreon for bonus outtakes from the show, including Tori's rapid-fire lightning round with the guest and some pre- and post-show persiflage that we usually edit out. Go to chatteronbooks.com to subscribe to our monthly newsletter, where you'll get a sneak peek at the upcoming authors. And don't forget, if you're buying books, please try bookshop.org. It's easy, it's online, and the best thing is you'll be supporting your favorite independent bookstores and affiliates like Chatter on Books. So download us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a review on Apple if you're feeling so disposed. But, most importantly, just stay in touch. Send questions, comments, ideas, and even insults to info@chatteronbooks.com. That's info@chatteronbooks.com. And thanks again for listening. Stay safe. We'll see you next time.
Okay, April Reynolds, the book is Shape of Dreams. Thank you for writing it. Thank you for sharing it with us. Your
Thank
students
you.
are very lucky to have you. I hope they know. Lauren, thank you for stepping up this afternoon, this evening, my friend. Erica, great to see you. And you're coming back soon.
I hope
With your
so.
stuff, which will be fantastic. We're back in 2 weeks. I swear to God, everybody, 2 weeks, because I've screwed up the March schedule. With Charlotte Wood. If none of you have read Stoneyard Devotional, go read Stoneyard Devotional. But she's coming back with a re-release of The Natural Way of Things, which is fantastic. Michael Williams, I'm sorry you couldn't join us, but thank you for bringing KD to us for the pitch. That is fantastic. And everybody, go buy this book. Thanks, you all.